It's not easy, but it comes back to, you know, what are the gatekeepers looking for? How can I gain trust with them? What are the skills that I currently already have? How can I amplify those skills? And what training do I need to close those gaps? And that's really what this whole process does.
Welcome back to Paths to Purpose. Thanks again for joining us. We've had some pretty incredible guests over the last few episodes to kind of talk about the core elements of finding purpose and the ability to develop trust. So just as an overview, we've had kind of an overall process episode. How does this whole thing work? We talked about introspection with Monique Malcolm Hay. We talked about choosing impactful projects with Marco Dorado. And then we last week discussed establishing trust with Warren Kozowski. So if you haven't listened to those last three episodes, I would really recommend going back and listening to those, because those are kind of the core elements of this whole process that we're discussing in this podcast and finding purpose. But sometimes kind of what we've talked about so far can feel really fluffy and philosophical and not exactly something that you might feel that you have the tools to tangibly go and do yourself. And so this week we're kind of going to shift gears, and it's just Alan and I, sorry to disappoint everyone, but we're going to circle back and talk about how we connect all of these topics in a more tangible and tactical way for everyone going forward. So the goal for us as hosts today is that by the end of this episode, you'll have a roadmap where you can sit down, write it out, and it'll really help you kind of find your purpose and engage in that area. And we're going to also provide a visual resource of everything that we're talking about today on our Instagram page. So without further ado, Alan, let's assume that our listeners have maybe just a beginning or a vague idea of what their purpose is, the things that do resonate with them. But they're kind of, you know, stuck, because that's where we've left everyone off. So let's go back to the beginning of the process. Can we start by talking more about the general structure of how this works, and kind of what do we do after we have maybe a little spark of inspiration or an idea?
Yeah, thanks. I'm happy to discuss that. And I think this is a good time to bring that in, because I think a lot of students with whom I work at this stage are sort of lost, because they're doing a lot of introspective work and they don't really understand how it all fits together. So I thought this was actually a great time to bring it together. It's actually pretty simple, and we have to think about a gatekeeper. I think I've mentioned this in earlier discussions, but imagine that there's a project that we're really interested in engaging. It's a career idea that we have. There's always a person, a human, who's gatekeeping our access to that thing. And so we have to also envision that this person is extremely busy and is committed to the project and cares a lot about the quality of work that goes into the project. So we have to start with that as given. And basically what we're trying to do is gain access by earning trust with this person. And if we're able to do that, then the probability that they allow us into the job opportunity goes up. There are no guarantees in life, but if I can earn trust with a gatekeeper, I can adjust the probability such that the likelihood of them wanting to bring me in goes up. And so that's kind of the core idea behind this. As we discussed kind of last time, and we've actually threaded this throughout, this notion of trust, I like to use the Thin Book of Trust, which discusses four core elements, which includes sincerity and care, which is one of the reasons why I always talk about having emotional resonance, because if I care emotionally about something, then I can sort of show that organically with this gatekeeper. And then it also relies on competency and reliability, which is why we have to do some training to show that we can add value to the project. So what we're trying to do with this whole concept that I've been mentoring and that we're talking about in our podcast is this notion of kind of identifying who the gatekeeper is, how do we connect with them emotionally, and then how do we show them that we're competent and reliable so that they can have trust with us and maybe give us access. So
can I ask you a question before you go forward? Just
sure.
I'm wondering if people listening are gonna think that the gatekeeper is only the person who maybe would be, you know, their boss in a new job or something, or you know, limiting their thinking into a gatekeeper as maybe someone who is an expert in their field. Can you kind of talk about maybe the type of people that would be seen as gatekeepers and what you're discussing?
Yeah. So in some cases it is in fact sort of the boss of a project, but in other cases it's the person doing the recruitment, or, and I don't even want to label it as a person. It could be a committee. So there could be an admissions committee looking at your package. It could also be a human resources committee. Also, a gatekeeper could simply be somebody who's going to bridge you to the opportunity. So for example, if I'm going to reach out to you, or you're going to reach out to me to try to get a hold of my networks, I need to trust that you're going to trust the people within my networks. And so I might be the gatekeeper to get you in front of the person where you can pitch your case to gain access. And so it's really any person in the way, or I don't want to use the term, but any person who can help bridge into the opportunity. And so I use that a little bit loosely.
Yeah. So you might have multiple gatekeepers, right? Before you get to kind of the place that you're trying to engage with. It's not just going to be, you know, a one and done. Here's my gatekeeper. Now that I have an established relationship with this person, my journey is complete.
Yeah, I think that's important. And you can think of it this way, that, for example, if you get involved, I mean, just thinking in terms of graduate school programs that are designed to train you up on something, which we'll get into the training piece in a minute. They have networks, right? So they've been working with internship coordinators, they have career placement networks. So they're all part of this gatekeeper network, if you think of it that way. And so you're trying to earn trust throughout the system. There's sort of a system of people involved in helping you place where you want to go.
Okay. Keep going. I just wanted to stop there for a second and clarify that it's not just one individual or even an individual to begin with.
Yeah, that's actually important. I'm glad you brought that up. And the key, though, is you have to be consistent on all of these things. So the key is you have to show organic, like genuine emotional commitment. It drives everything. First of all, as I noted, there's a psychological bond that we need to make with the people in the system we're trying to access. And so it drives that psychological bonding to these people, but it also is the tool that, you know, kind of the fuel that helps us actually do the hard work that we're going to need to do to show that we're competent and gain that kind of trust. And as an example, I recall that when we talked in episode 2 with you about your journey, you had mentioned that you're doing law school and you'd finally articulated why you were doing law school. And that helped you, because I actually listened to the quote. You said, quote, "It's really, really hard." But you said that you understood why you were doing it at that point. And it was this emotional fuel, right? Can you speak to that a little bit? Or
yeah, I think it's a really powerful thing once you identify kind of what your purpose is, and it continues to drive you when times get tough and when you meet resistance and when you're, you know, trying really hard to kind of break into the groups of people that you want to work with in the future. And I think Lauren kind of talked about this a little bit in our last episode as well, is, you know, purpose can be something that's really scary, because if we, you know, have this really lofty idea of the group that we want to help or the place that we want to engage with, and that can seem really daunting. And, you know, maybe the path that you need to take to get there, like in my case, it is 3 years of graduate school that are really hard in the moment, because you might have to do training or take a class or do something that might not directly tie to your purpose, but you know that the overall overarching goal does. And so in those moments where you might not see the direct link between, you know, writing a paper on transactional law or something like that, like how does that relate to women's rights advocacy work? Well, the course in particular might not, but the overarching goal that you're doing and achieving going to school does.
Yeah, and there's a couple other examples. My second kid is doing marine bio at University of Miami to swim with sharks, literally, and to do shark research, and is now going through first semester physics and calc and second semester calc, right? And it's not entirely clear why one has to do calculus and physics for this, but the fact is that there's an emotional drive behind this, and it's not so much I want to be a mathematician. It's sort of I have to do it in order to get to where I want to be, which is playing around with sharks. I find it interesting that my child wants to actually be low on the food chain in career career work, but.
I think that that just fits Taylor so perfectly, though. And I think we'll eventually pull Taylor into this podcast series as well. But she, yeah, that's a great example of this concept.
Yeah, and also, I mean, likewise, you see it in the military. So I did prisoner of war survival training, which was by no means fun. And you know, for me, it was this emotional resonance to kind of the purpose of the whole thing, why I was doing it, which is sort of a checkbox in order for me to kind of go out and do what I did in flying airplanes. So again, it's really core. This is why, if you go back to where we started, everything we're talking about is emotional resonance, emotional triggers, and things that resonate emotionally. So that's kind of that piece, because it again, as a summary, it binds you to the gatekeepers psychologically. It allows you to connect with them emotionally and for them to earn that piece of trust. And then it's also the fuel for you to do the training. When we
Yeah.
think, I'm sorry.
Can I stop you
Yeah.
before you get to your next point? I want to kind of check in while we're going through this. So maybe this isn't even step one that you've gotten to yet. This is kind of step zero that we're at before we get to the three steps that we're going to outline today. So step zero itself is kind of understanding what emotionally resonates with you as an individual, and then maybe that's not even a clear vision yet, but having that nugget of inspiration, and then kind of identifying who those people are that are the gatekeepers in that space. And then we're going to kind of talk about how to engage with them, obviously, in the next couple steps. But know that if you are feeling like, well, I don't even know, what my purpose is yet fully, I just have this idea, that's okay. And that's something that, this isn't a, you're going to identify it and it's going to be perfect, and you're not going to have any questions or any doubt that's going to come in throughout this process. But step zero, I'd say, before we get to the three-step process, is just kind of listing out, who are the people in the space that I can engage with.
Yeah, and you know, it comes to the projects and the people. I mean, the purpose, the hardest part of this whole process is figuring out what you want to do and owning it. And once you kind of own it and you realize, okay, this is the clarity that I want to do, then finding the projects and the people is easy. Kind of, you know, getting your head around, okay, now where am I going to invest the time? That's the easier part relatively. But then, you know, then we're getting into, now that I've found them, how do I get in them? So the reason why we're actually bringing all of this together in this template is, I know people get intimidated. They're like, okay, I don't believe this can happen. I don't know how to do this. And so we're trying to build the big picture here, so that they feel as though it's doable once they've invested on the purpose piece.
Right. Yeah, I
So
think
go ahead.
I think that that's something that, again, getting back to something that Lauren mentioned last week, was just, again, how daunting things can seem. And I definitely remember that from the beginning of when I started this process with you, and I think I kind of touched on that in episode two as well. But when you have these really big things that you care about and you want to invest in, and a lot of them are systemic issues, or maybe it's just a really multifaceted problem, and you think that it's just, there's no way that you as an individual could make a difference into that huge issue that you care about. That's what this is for, and why kind of we're going through this today. Because you might think, oh, one person, the impact they're going to have, maybe it's not enough. That's a fallacy. And the way that you can engage in a space, even as just an individual, can make huge ripple effects. And so that's kind of why we're bringing this together.
Yeah, and the other thing too to remember, which is something I don't know if we've really spoken too much about it, is that you don't like n no initiative, no project is done by yourself. I mean, you know, some ideas come around by
Absolutely.
yourself, but you gotta collaborate. And so one of the reasons why we said people, it's people with whom you're going to collaborate. And so you got to kind of build a team around it. So the idea is that you're trying to slot in as a team member, and you're trying to add some value to the team. And so first, like I said, you've got to have emotional commitment, so they believe that you're committed to the project. And then you got to figure out, which is sort of where we're heading into, is like, how do I add some value? What do I do to get this competency so that people know that I can deliver something into the mix? And this is where it kind of gets important. There is no single path. A lot of people are like, oh, I have to go down this path. And I'm like, no, actually you don't. There's so many different ways in which you can train on competency, but there are patterns in the data that we can look at. And I broke it down into three stages in order to kind of get competency, so people believe that you can add value. The first stage is actually pretty challenging, because we're not trained to do this, and it's basically to take inventory of your existing skills. Now, one of the problems when I do this is that we have a tendency to think of ourselves negatively, and we also have a tendency to diminish our skills and to say, well, I'm not as good as so and so in something. And we think relatively, but the fact is that we have skills. We rely on them daily. That's another thing, is we have these blind spots because we have skills we do daily, but we don't pay any attention to them because they're innate. And so this part of the exercise includes thinking about, okay, what do I do all the time? What are my skills? And can I bring them out honestly so that I'm not constantly saying, yeah, but I'm not really that good at it, and kind of diminishing them. So some examples of skills that are obvious would be things like, well, most of my students, because they're in business and accounting and finance, are algorithmic thinkers. They're logic thinkers. They have applied math skills. Many of my students can speak. They can write. Other skills are hidden. We rely on them and we don't think about them, such as the ability to listen to people. The ability to think before we speak is a skill, because sometimes when we speak before we think, we say things that other people don't want to hear or that put them off. So emotional intelligence would be a skill. And one of the things I actually bring up as a skill too, is some of the things that I've seen people, including myself, deal with as negative, which is actually in some instances positive, like anxiety. So many of my students have shown up, for example, with anxiety, but I consider it controlled and practical use anxiety. And these are the folks, for example, who are maybe schedulers who do a lot of work trying to make sure their calendar is booked properly, or who worry about little details. And in some ways, while they might view it as a negative or a weakness, I actually view that as a strength in some contexts. For example, if I were going to do logistics planning, if I were going to put on a concert, if I were going to do, a presidential inauguration, I want somebody who has controlled attention to detail, kind of spinning around a little bit of anxiety behind the scenes, because they're going to make sure that we don't forget anything and they're going to double check their work. And so to me, there's a really core key here, a core element here of stage one, is what do I actually bring to the table without any training?
Yeah, I think this pairs really well with kind of some of the introspection tools that Monique talked about in episode 3, and kind of trying to take the time and think about, what do I do well? What are my accomplishments? And I think that that's a good way to start this if you're kind of lost with, oh my gosh, like you said, we're trained not to think about what we do in almost a positive way, and we're almost trained to be humble. We're almost trained to be humble in a way that we don't think about what we're doing as something that is a skill. And so I think that's a good way to start this, is to think about, if maybe list out all the accomplishments that you've done up to that point, and then go through and maybe think about, what are the skills that I had to accomplish those tasks. And I'm glad you also brought up behaviors as well as skills, because I think sometimes we box ourselves into thinking about skills as something like applied math, or I'm really good at building pivot tables in Excel or something like that is the skill. But there's actually so much more value in behaviors as skills that we can bring to the table for the gatekeepers that we're trying to engage with.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really, really, really important that you don't diminish these things. And you cannot, in this exercise, when I work with students, I tell them, do not think relative to other people. You absolutely need to stop the thinking about, but I'm not as good as X. So for example, if you're an athlete, it doesn't matter that you're not, you're not in the Super Bowl, or that, or not winning Olympic gold medals or something like that. It's simply that, you have endurance. So just say it as fact, I can do endurance stuff, or I can whatever. You need to know what you can, you do. You don't always have to be the best at anything. You just need to be able to do things. And then we can decide, how does it all come together and fit together? But we have to start with understanding, what do I bring to the table?
Yeah. And I think an important thing that I remember from this time for me was, it was almost like this fear crept in at this stage. And even the most recent time that I've gone through this process, before I went to law school, it was like I had this, realization that, well, what if I'm not good at this? And what if I fail in some way in engaging in this space, because I'm not, this amazing, incredible person that, has already done these 10 other things. And that is something that comes from and insecurity within oneself. And that's really hard to work through. And, you know, I just want to acknowledge that that's definitely something that takes time. And, you know, you don't have to fix that overnight when you're going through this process. I think that being confident and embracing kind of your flaws and seeing them as strengths takes a lot of time and emotional commitment to shift your thinking. And hopefully this process will kind of help people realize that you can use those things that maybe, you know, you do have anxiety, or maybe you have kind of an inability to do something that you've always seen as a negative. And let's try and flip that into a positive in a way that you can engage in the space that you care about.
Yeah. And actually, you triggered another thing that I constantly work on with when I'm working with students and even with myself. This relates to me in pilot training. So I call it look ahead insecurity. So you're looking ahead and you're like, oh, I don't know if I could ever get there. And I'm worried I might fail, because you're looking ahead at the people who are doing things better than you are. And you struggle with that because you're like, wow, they're so much better than I am. And so I internalize this as sort of a potential incapability. But then when I started decomposing this, I said, okay, there are two reasons why they're better than I am. One is because they have better ability. And the other one is simply because we have equal ability, but they've just had more time investment. And when I was in pilot training, I started to realize that I'm capable. I just needed more time investment. If I were in a singing competition like American Idol, I'm incapable. And so time investment will not help. And so it's really important to make that distinction. Am I capable and I just need to spend more time? In which case I'm like, then spend time. Or am I incapable and the amount of time I would invest will never get me there? Because if I took vocal lessons, I'm not going to go and sing. I'm just not. So that's a really important distinction to figure out whether you have the ability, but you just need time to get up to speed, or whether, in which case I'm like, then do the time. And so that's really important when you look ahead.
I think that before we move on to step two, that's kind of gets back to the entire reason on kind of what my idea was behind this podcast in the first place. Is I think we look at, we have this tendency anyway, to look at people that have these incredible, you know, jobs or influence or, you know, any of the things that we value. And we think that they just happened, because as a society, I think we tend to celebrate the end result rather than kind of the journey, and to kind of, you know, take back the curtain and say, okay, what are all the failures or the steps that happened in between them, you know, being a person that was, you know, 16 years old and didn't know what they wanted to do, to this really successful person that everyone really thinks is incredible. And that was something that I was frustrated with as a young person, was that we tended to only celebrate people after they had, quote, made it. You know, it was like, once they got to that place, it was like, oh, it's so great. And they're so amazing. And they have all these skills, but we don't focus on the process that got them there. And that's something that is so valuable to just discuss and to kind of peel back and say, okay, how did they get there? How did they become this really phenomenal person? And it's like you said, we get really scared because we compare our current state selves to someone else's future state. And that's something that we should never do, because it just will take the wind out of our sails.
It's really intimidating. But when you break it apart and you realize that, you know, you could have equal capability and you just need to invest time, then that to me is exciting. Cause then I'm like, okay, let's invest that time. So just to kind of get back, I mean, so you know, we take this inventory of existing skills, and important to be as unemotional about that as possible. So here we are, we just came off of an emotional resonance, and now I'm asking you to not be emotional on the inventory analysis. So work with me on that. And then finally, step two, I for competency, I consider to be basically trying to get a sense for what the gatekeeper needs. Like, what skills are they looking for? How can I add value? And again, as you mentioned, there is no specific gatekeeper, but you can try to think about it a little bit more generally. So there are ways to do this, including studying the project, you know, who's working for it, what skills are they bringing? And some skills are, you know, in my mind, pretty obvious if you just think about it organically. Like if I've had some students go into environmental consulting, sustainability consulting. So then, you know, in my mind, you need organizational change management skills, you need environmental science. If you're going to go into, you know, doing healthcare policy work or changing healthcare business operations, you probably need to know medicine. And to be clear, you don't necessarily need to know all of these, but you need somebody in the team, and you need to think about where you could slot into that team. Medicine, human relations, government relations, and finance are just examples of skills that that enterprise needs. And so, you know, you can decide, well, which of those could I bring in to the table? And as in another example, a real example, one of my students, Michaela, who went into, who's now a politician, but who went into early education policy work, you know, she brought finance and accounting skills into education policy, which was badly needed in that space. So that's an example of a skill set that she brought over into that work area. So again, trying to get a sense for what can I bring to the table to help the project?
Yeah, I think that that's really important. And I want to acknowledge that maybe people might not know what the skills are when they're just, maybe they've had this epiphany moment, or, you know, they're feeling, again, intimidated. And one way to kind of go about this, and we'll get into this a little bit later in this episode, but is kind of just go online and look at maybe job postings in the field that you want. Maybe it's not your dream job. And maybe it's not even, you're not even sure if it's something that, will be the end goal for you. But in the meantime, and when you're doing this work, kind of go and see what they're looking for. What do they explicitly say that they need? And kind of like you're saying, Alan, you might not need to be an expert in finance. I'm very thankful that I don't need to be an expert in finance, but you might need to be able to speak the language, and you might need some general understanding of a topic. And that doesn't mean that you will have to be an expert in every single thing that your field needs, but it does mean that you'll be able to, or it does mean that you will need to be able to have conversations with people and communicate needs in different spaces. And so I think that's kind of an important distinction.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because it talks also about closing the third stage, which is closing the skills gaps. So, and this is where people get intimidated, because they're like, well, there's so much I have to learn in order to get there, because I just don't know. But I'm like, that's the fun part. The learning is the fun part. If you care about something, that's the fun part. And even the language, I love that you use that term. I had a student who was interested in going to government work, particularly with forensic work for government enforcement, and did, after a long discussion, did a summer immersive in language, in a particular language that the government, the US government, was actually looking for and was interested in. And that was one of the hardest skill gap requirements that she worked on. So as far as training to close the skill gap, so I have some sense of what my skills are, but now I want to kind of close any gaps or amplify some of the skills that I have. And so I'll look for, you know, ways to find what are the gaps. I'll look for, you know, patterns in how others took to training, which relates to why you're in law school based on your story. Mm-hmm. You know, we did this analysis, which you can share in a minute, about, you know, how you arrived at realizing that the JD option would add value into what you're trying to do. But there is no specific path for skills gaps training. I always try to go with the most efficient path. So I'm always looking for one that has high payoff, high impact for effort, which is one of my mottos. So Michaela went to drop into a juvenile jail for a month. I had that student who did the summer immersive language program. I've had students do internships and refugee projects. I've had students do deep engagement volunteer projects. And, you know, the surface level volunteer projects don't add much value, but if you do a deep dive for a couple months into something on site, that could be really important. And then, of course, there's also graduate programs, but it's not like, hey, I'm going to go to graduate school. It's like, I'm going to go to this specific graduate school because this has a research program where it has a professor working on, you know, a shark research boat or something like that. It's a very specific targeted type of skills gap. You stalked LinkedIn for clues. That's like, I remember you mentioning that's one of your favorite things to do. So tell me a little bit about what you were doing there.
I love LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn quite frequently. And that's something that I think really helps with this gap analysis that we're talking about here. For me, LinkedIn has really been a great resource in that way, because I use LinkedIn to kind of identify people who I aspire to be or aspire to have experiences like. And so I'll go on LinkedIn and just search, you know, basic keyword search terms. Like when I was thinking about law school, I would go on LinkedIn and I would think, okay, what are the types of job titles that I would want? Or, you know, maybe what's just some basic keywords that resonate with me. So I would search, you know, women's rights lawyer or like women's rights law once I realized that that was kind of the thing that I wanted to do. And so then they would pull up different people and I would look at their CV and see the experiences they had. And if they had any descriptions, kind of, you know, what are the skills that they did there? What are the things that I either resonated with or identified as things that I needed to work on? And what's really great about LinkedIn is it allows you to reach out to people who you've never met before. You can send them a message, and sometimes you can't send them a message unless you have LinkedIn Pro, just so everyone's aware, but you can send a connection to someone, and that allows you to add a little note with the connection and use that. That's like those 160 characters or whatever you get are really important because it allows you to say, hey, my name is Danielle. I am currently a student at X University. I really am interested in getting into this field. Would you be willing to spend 15 minutes with me talking about your path?
So the great thing about that particular strategy is it relies exactly on what we've been talking about. That strategy will only work if you can articulate and demonstrate trust and develop trust in the system. Because if you ask somebody cold to give you time and you do it sloppily, they're done. There's no way you'll ever get that time back again. So you have to show sincerity and care, which is why you had suggested 15 minutes and no more than 15 minutes. You have to keep your ask extremely precise. Would you be willing to, you know, I usually say seed it with one specific question only one question that they can answer within 15 minutes. They may give you a lot more time, but that shows that you trust or that you care about their time. And then finally, you have to actually care who they are for a reason, because if they sense that you're doing this because they're some big wig or because you want access to something that you're not really emotionally attached to, I can tell you that when people ask me for my time and I sense that they don't care, I sense it immediately and I'm done and I won't reengage them. I think the key is that you can learn a lot from doing LinkedIn searches. You can learn a lot from studying the projects. You can learn a lot from studying the people. And absolutely, if you can get 2, 3, 4 people to have quick conversations with you, you can definitely learn a lot. And in fact, that's something that when I work with students and we're going to go do, for example, a graduate program, I think that's requisite. I think you have to talk to people before you even apply and spend a lot of money and time into a program. But basically, you know, to close, because I know we're running out of time, fundamentally, the big picture on this is, again, that you know, once we find the purpose, which obviously takes a lot of work, then the rest of it is actually kind of easier. It's not easy, but it comes back to, you know, what are the gatekeepers looking for? How can I gain trust with them? What are the skills that I currently already have? How can I amplify those skills? And what training do I need to close those gaps? And that's really what this whole process does. And all of that doesn't guarantee outcomes, but it absolutely guarantees the likelihood of a favorable outcome is much higher. And that's basically the project, the system that I've applied to all the students with whom I've worked over the years.
Yeah, definitely. So to summarize again, step one, identify what your skills are. Step two, identify what the skills and needs are of your gatekeeper. And then step three, conduct that gap analysis, figure out the things that you need to improve on or work on to get into that space. And then we'll kind of, you know, from here, we can discuss more in future episodes about what those are, maybe for specific people. But it's a really simple idea, but it's really hard to do. So be patient with yourself as you're going through the process. You know, take breaks. It's not something that you might do in one afternoon and be like, okay, great, now I'm done. I'm finished. So again, be patient. So with that, we're going to wrap up today's episode. Thanks again for listening. We hope that you've been enjoying this series. If you are, we would really love it if you could subscribe on your preferred platform, or if you're listening on Apple Podcasts and want to leave us a rating, we would be super grateful for that. And let us know how you're working through this process and how maybe this week it went for you. And if you're starting to do this gap analysis, you know, are you running into any issues? Are you needing any more assistance or guidance on certain aspects? Let us know. As per usual, if you have feedback or want to talk to us about anything about this process so far, our Instagram is at paths2purposepod, or our email is paths2purposepod@gmail.com. And don't forget, we'll be posting a visual guide and resource to what we've been talking about today on our Instagram page. So thanks again, and we'll see you next week. Bye.